Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey, it's Labor Day. Wonderful. It's the end of the summer. Episode number 125. This is Andrew Horowitz. And, you know, when I was a kid, we always would know it was the end of the summer with the Jerry Lewis telethon. Right after that, it was kind of like, ugh, back to school. But, you know, this down in Florida, they start school like in, I don't know, like early August. It's awful. But nonetheless, you know me, I've been soaking up fun in the sun. If you consider inside of a dark office throughout the day, fun and sun, and then kind of maybe on the weekends getting out there. But it's been a wild summer, and I thought we would end it off with a great episode. I have two guests. I'm going to hold one of the guests on the side for a second and introduce you, a surprise guest. The second one that's going to be on today is going to be a gentleman who runs a company. It's actually it's this neat product, which is like a squawk box, we call it, where you actually can get instantaneous news on all sorts of items that are really pushing the markets right through your computer. And this is something we've used in the past. It's kind of like a little birdie on your desk, something that you can really you don't have to worry about where things are coming from and knowing where to look. It just comes right over there, and it could be a little annoying sometimes, I suppose, but I think you'll enjoy hearing about it, and I think there's going to be a free trial or something like that, so stick around for that. My first guest, though, is someone who by far is my favorite and your favorite guest. I know that because of all the emails that I get from you. And I thought what I would do is bring him on, and I guess because we've all been wondering, where has Frankie been? So, Frank Curzio, what's going on, buddy?
How's everything, man?
Everything's doing great. I could say that, man, I haven't talked to you in a while, but, you know, I what do we talk, two or three times a day?
At least, yeah.
So tell us what's going on with you. Where are you doing? Where have you been? What are you doing? What's going on?
Well, last time we spoke, I was in the process of opening up my own business, and I've gotten great feedback from it. But then something interesting happened in the middle of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it happened a little earlier because I probably would have saved money. But a company called Stansberry & Associates, they are one of my competitors from my previous employer, and they are pretty much the best in the industry when it comes to newsletters. They are a very large publisher, and they came to me and approached me and said, you know, if they're interested in starting an under 10 product. And I was very interested, and you know, I just felt like when a company, or you know, I use the expression, when the Yankees come and ask you to play, mm-hmm. you don't say no.
Right.
So I'm very, very excited, and I've been there for the past couple of weeks, and so far it's exceeded my expectations, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to the opportunity. So I am going to be launching another Under 10 newsletter very, very shortly.
Well, that's going to be great. You know what we'll do? We'll make sure to put your new bio and the information where people can get to you directly on the show notes of this episode. So nobody worry. Nobody worry. It'll be there for you. You'll know where Frank is at all times. So it's kind of, there's been a lot of things going on this summer, and we've had cash for clunkers, cash for appliances coming up. We have employment numbers that have been all over the place, some better than others, some disappointing than others. We've had earnings come out much better for companies, and then we could talk a little bit about that. And we have this dreaded healthcare issue that seems to be just dragging down the president's approval ratings by, you know, digits a day.
Did you see what they are now? They're 42.
42? I thought it was 45. It's 42.
They actually went down to 42. Yeah, 42.
See, I probably looked yesterday. I'm telling you, it goes down a couple of points every day.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I know it is.
So I don't know what you want to tackle first, but let's tackle some of the, you like to talk about the economics. Let me ask you a question. Do you think the economic numbers matter as much anymore? Because it seems to be that the good numbers drive markets up, bad numbers are somewhat ignored.
I think they matter. I mean, we saw this week, we're seeing factory orders come out, and just to break down the numbers, which is what I always used to do with the podcast, is that's both durable and non-durable. So
right.
Durable, like cash for clunkers, of course it's going to be great. The government's throwing money at it. But the other component, non-durable, and that is more things like clothing, paper, chemical, they fell by 2%. And that's significant. That's the largest drop since December. Also, we saw non-defense capital good orders, which is pretty much directly related to business investments. That also declined sharply. It declined 0.3%. Those aren't a good sign. It's kind of telling you that the consumer's not really spending unless they're getting help from the government. Also,
right.
We saw productivity numbers, which were enormous, and everybody says how great that is. But when you look really deeper into the report, labor costs fell by the most in 9 years. It tells me companies are still cutting costs and doing everything to make their earnings
numbers. Yeah, and part-time employees.
Yeah, exactly. And the numbers are not good out there. And if you really look at some of this economic data more closely, you know, as we all know, we see statistics all the time. 70% of spending in our economy comes from the consumer. Well, they're making less money. They're getting their hours cut. They're getting their benefits cut, which means they are pretty much spending more on health care, which is less discretionary spending. And those who are working are going to see enormous tax increases. It's going to be in the form of state, federal, cap and trade, property, you name it, probably all of the above. But we're going to have to pay off this debt eventually. And it's all fun and games when the money's being spent. Everybody's having fun, and I get it. But you know, you look at that $9 trillion number that's been throwing out there. That $9 trillion is a $9 trillion we're going to accumulate over the next 10 years. That's on top of our national deficit, which is nearly $12 trillion. So we're talking about $20 trillion. I guess it's not a lot of money if you get $10 trillion.
No.
$20 trillion, $30 trillion,
the
same thing.
Yeah, no, once you get above a couple of trillion, it all just zeros.
Trillion. Yeah. I try to relate these figures to you know, because the economy is about you and I. It's about, you know, looking outside your house and seeing for sale signs, seeing how the market's doing. Everyone's like, well, housing market's picking up. That the average home price actually keeps coming down because all the sales are from foreclosures.
Yeah, foreclosures, right, and short sales or on other distressed sales.
And when you're looking at the economic figures and the earnings, for the fact of the matter is that they're all coming out good, but they're all coming out good because the government is there to support us. Once they remove that, because we can't keep spending forever, I don't think this economy is going to be able to survive
on
its own.
But Frank, you say that you don't think that they can keep spending forever. Aren't we at the point of forever already in terms of, you know, where's the limit? Why do they have to stop? What's going to stop them? I mean, what's going to stop them from spending?
You know what? That's a great question. Because right now they haven't stopped spending. But when we see inflation come, I think that's when it's going to happen. Right now the government can get away with it because we're seeing home prices come down. We're seeing wages come down. So I wouldn't make the deflation argument. But, you know, you inflation guys out there, I don't see inflation for another 18 months. When inflation really kicks in, I think the government's going to go, what the hell did we just do? That could be. I don't know when the timing's going to be. I wish I did. I'm not that smart. But the timing could be anywhere from 3 years to 5 years when that inflation kicks in. I mean, they're even playing. Look at gold. Look at the commodities. Look at the dollar. I mean, you know, they're indicating that we're going to see inflation, but it's just a matter of when. I think it's going to be a little bit further out because we still have prices coming down in certain areas. But it's going to be interesting to see how this market plays out. And, you know, when we feel the full effects of the government that, you know, refuses to or just keeps spending money.
So does that mean that we're safe in the markets for, I don't know, 2 years and then it's going to be, 2008 part two?
You know, everybody thinks the market's going to come down within the next couple of months. Almost everybody I see, all the technical indicators and the technical analysts, and you know as well as I do, and some of the best ones that we read, have been absolutely dead wrong. Absolutely dead wrong.
I think 100% wrong would be right to say.
and they've been right for a long time, just saying right now, and it should just wake you up to not any one strategy works. I don't care who you are, and these people compare historical data and why that's going to happen in the future. There's no one strategy that works. You have to get that out of your head. But, you know, you're looking at technical indicators indicating that we're going to come down. You're seeing, the market, the major move here. But you have to understand that, and I know September and October are terrible months as well, the worst months on history, but they also say, you know, sell a man, go away. If you did that, you'd be kicking yourself in the head right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you really have to look forward for the next 3 months. We're going to see very strong economic data. We're going to see very strong earnings. You're seeing inventories continue to come down. That's good for corporate profits. They're still laying off. If you listen to the conference calls of Walmart, you listen to the conference calls of Cisco, they're not hiring. Hardly anybody's hiring out there.
Right.
Unemployment's going through the roof. It's 16%. It's not 9%, guys. It's 16%. That includes the people who stop looking for work because they're discouraged. So if you're looking at those numbers, I see a lot of trouble later on. But over the next 3 months, just be aware, it might be difficult to come down because we're going to see good numbers. We're going to see good same-store sales numbers from the retailers because everyone continues to cut dramatically. Now, the thing is, there's
a limit.
Hold on, back up.
Same-store sales have nothing to do with cutbacks.
Same-store sales.
Same-store sales are sales. Sales, not net sales.
Same-store sales are going to get a lot better going forward.
Because
it's not going to happen by the same-store sales, but same-store sales are down 20% plus
past. Right.
So same-store sales going forward are going to get positive because they're going to compare until last month, which is
sequentially. Right. Now,
that's what we're looking for.
Let's talk about that.
Same-store sales are going to get better going forward. We're going to see positive data, which I don't know if that's enough to push this market down in the next 3 months like everybody
says. Let's talk about this. One of the things that we look at when we look at GDP, same-store sales, or most of these numbers are continual year-over-year comparisons, as an example. Schiller, Case Schiller, we look at monthlies, of course, but we look at year-over-years. We've seen this kind of better movement lately where things are ticking up, but if you look at where we were in the gutter. So what's happening now is not normality, nothing like that, but it seems to me that we're just picking up a little bit, and even a pickup from where we were, like negative 30, just kind of getting to negative 35 is a few percent better. So all of a sudden you get the number, you're like, yeah, we're up 2% from a year ago.
And that's the thing. We're going against a lot of easy comparisons. You look at housing. Home prices are down. We have record low interest rates. We have an $8,000 tax credit. Home prices have no place else. So not really the home prices, but the home data has no place else but to tick up from here. That's why you're going to see these positive figures, something I talked about earlier, where, yes, it seems like the home builders are still inventory, a lot of inventory, and, yes, they're cutting into it a little bit. But this data is going to be better than it was over the past couple of months. And that's why I don't know if it's going to be like GDP figures. We all know GDP is going to be through the roof next quarter. It could be more than 3%.
Right.
However, what's going to happen after that? Do you see growth more than 2%? I mean, we could even fall back into a recession in I would say, second half of 2010 would not surprise me.
Yep.
So, but the next quarter, just be aware, because those of you who are calling for the huge market pullback, which are a lot of people out there, just be careful and know when the data is supposed to be released, because sometimes these markets, and you see that short covering, forget it. I know. That sometimes the market just turns on a dime. You see within stocks where things look terrible and they come out one positive data point, like they just came out with some kind of a new application for the iPod and the stock goes up 35%.
Yeah.
So just be very careful out there.
Exactly. So, okay, economics aside, we know there's a lot of problems with that. What about the healthcare bill? There's been a lot of talk that at this point, one of the things that Obama wanted to do was before the congressional break, he wanted to get this thing done because he's seen historically that when I think Clinton did it and a few other times that this was being done, when they wait till after the break, it loses momentum and creates all sorts of problems and nothing happens. So so now I just got an interesting email from someone who was telling me he's buying the HMOs. And I'm thinking, why are you buying the HMOs? I'm thinking to myself, the HMOs, why would you buy the healthcare companies in front of this potential bulldozer about to come down? And he's telling me that no matter what happens, whether it goes through or not, it's going to be good for them because you still have to run everything through them. And there's a lot more to that. I don't know if you think the same thing, but it's interesting concept that, you're not going to get rid of United Health and a few of these other groups that are out there that run these things, Aetna, et cetera. Do you think it's too risky or do you think let's back up. Do you think this healthcare initiative in any form is going to pass?
I don't think it's going to pass, no. But you know what's funny out there is everyone's so worried about a government-run plan. They should have a government-run plan, right? Especially if you're a bull in this market, you should have a government-run plan. They just show that they can cure the financial collapse within 4 or 5 months, right? I mean, come on. The government's great.
Right.
So why don't you go for it? But seriously, I don't think this is going to pass. And if you want to play the stocks within if this is going to pass or not, good luck. I would make sure the fundamentals are backing some of these healthcare stocks, but they're very volatile, and they've also had a pretty nice run. So
yeah, really nice run. But even if the fundamentals are backing it, that doesn't mean that with one sweep of a pen, all of a sudden, one of these guys is out in the cold.
No, but what it does mean is if it happens to go the wrong way and the company does have better fundamentals, chances are it will, you know, you'll have less downside risk compared to the companies that don't, where you can really collapse. So that's why I'm saying, you know, try to protect yourself on a downside. You're right, they're probably all going to come down the same. But, you know, you might get lucky with one that's, you know, diversified and has, you know, a good balance sheet or something, or good fundamentals, where it doesn't come down as much as the rest of the industry.
Yeah. Have you been
I'm always worried about in case you're wrong, because I have an under 10 guy.
Right.
I have to worry about, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Not, okay, Verizon, if it comes down 10% or 5%, I could hold it for another 20 years, I'd probably make my money back. No. Stocks under 10 is a lot different, so these stocks sometimes never come back.
Yep. Let me ask you, have you been watching natural gas at all?
Yes. And the collapse is unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And you know what? I want to get your opinion. I love talking to you, but I haven't talked to you about this. What's your opinion on natural gas? I would tend to start scaling in a little bit here if that sounds crazy enough, because everybody's bearish on it.
The problem is with natural gas is there is not – we've tried a couple of times. There is not a viable instrument to actually invest in unless you're going to go right directly to the commodity markets. One of the problems you have is the best known natural gas ETF is UNG. And if you look at that, that's I don't even know where it's down. We tried it twice, and both times failed miserably. Once we did it with a spread trade, so we made money on it, actually. But once, I don't think we lost about 10% on it. Small position. But if we held it, let me tell you something, it would have been a natural disaster. I mean, this thing is just going down, down, down. One of the problems is the CFTC is putting the clamps down on these commodity funds. They're saying that some of these commodity funds, like UNG and maybe even USO and a few others in the list, are possibly pushing the prices of these various commodities. There's so much money going. I think it was $8 billion. UNG is no longer allowed to offer any new shares. You know, an ETF perpetually creates new shares. They can't do that anymore. And since then, the shares started coming down dramatically. I think Deutsche Bank just closed their oil fund. And they said that, you know, with all the regulation that's going on, all that, it's not going to be a viable instrument any longer. So the CFTC is coming in and doing all sorts of maneuvers here. So even if you wanted to get into natural gas, maybe you can get into natural gas companies, maybe.
See, that's the thing where I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, because if you look at the natural gas companies, and there's another nat gas ETF, it's called, you know, it's a natural gas fund.
I think it's a Claymore,
First,
right? Claymore?
First Trust, I think it is. First Trust.
Okay, uh-huh.
And what they have is they actually, the UNG is directly related to the commodity.
Commodity,
but this
right.
one actually invests in natural gas stocks. And if
right.
you pull up a chart of both of them, UNG is down 80%. First Trust, which has the stocks, is only down 40%. So the stocks aren't really reflecting the commodity. They don't always do. We know that. You know, you see Exxon underperform oil all the time. Oil could be up 100%. Exxon may be up 20%. But I think the better play here might be UNG, because it doesn't seem like these natural gas stocks have come down that much. And, you know, I mean, with prices where they are, they could be in a lot of trouble. And if you invest in certain ones, and you know, there's just so much risk there that, you know, I don't know, if you're all going to invest, I guess, you know, and like stocks, maybe you go into the fund. But I think UNG, just because it underperforms so dramatically against some of these stocks, might be a better buy here.
But, there's one but. If the fund is not functionally working, in other words, not working correctly due to some reason that they can't issue shares because of the contango issue, all I'm saying is, yes, I may want to look at natural gas as a viable investment. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if I could use UNG.
Yeah, well, I could see your point. And there's one thing out there, too. Guys, if you're going to invest in whatever it is, I would try and scale in little by little, take small positions. This market is extremely volatile. You can see the market come down. I use the example all the time, like if First Solar reports earnings, you're going to see companies like Jay Solar and Evergreen Solar come down twice as much, even though, you know, there's news unrelated to them. So just scale into your positions little by little. Doesn't mean, you know, if you think UNG is a buy, don't go with a full position and buy here because you're going to get blown out by 10%.
Right.
You know, just be careful if you like it, because again, UNG, if you're going to buy it as an investment, it seems like it makes sense years away. I know that, you know, people, I think my doorbell rang because people want to store that gas in my house. I know how big the storage is, but seriously, like long term and the direction we're going into that gas, and it's clean energy, and you know, I won't get too far into that, but I do think it could be a good investment at this price. But again, it is speculative. It's really come down tremendously. I'm not trying to buy it.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So let's talk about, I thought that we would talk a little bit about the zombie investments going on right now. You have Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, AIG. We'll even bring Citibank into this discussion, and we'll leave Bank of America out for a moment, but let's talk about that. So we saw in the last couple of weeks just an amazing amount of movement in Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and in particular AIG. Now, everybody's all excited about AIG. Remember, they had a 20-to-1 reverse split. I think the high was really, if you go back, 600 or 700 or some ridiculous number, and currently trading in the, I don't know, 30s or 40, 30s, I guess it is. You know, this thing moves 25%. There was one day it moved 100%. On news like this, that Hank Greenberg's coming back to help out and work with the company to, you know, put it back together. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, is this the same Hank Greenberg that recently had to pay millions of dollars for some kind of either fraud or some other kind of something that he did through AIG?
Let me tell you something about it. That guy knew exactly what was going on at AIG at all.
Unbelievable.
Time, believe me. I mean, for him to get out what he got out, I mean, he should thank himself. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's good news because, hey, you know what? I would put him up there with someone that's responsible for the mess, I guess. I don't know. He knows more about the company than anybody else. Maybe that is good news.
I don't know. I suppose. So what's going to happen with these companies? I mean, first of all, why are they trading? What's your opinion on this? Why?
I have no idea why Fannie and Freddie are trading. They have negative book value. They're absolutely worthless. It doesn't mean you're not going to make money on them. You know, I look at under 10 stocks all the time. It's not about fundamentals. And people say, well, Frank, would you ever invest with them? I can't. I would never go out there and tell you to invest in them. However, I'm always aware of what my subscribers are thinking, and you know, people who call me are thinking, and sometimes they want to invest in these stocks. All I'm saying is if you do, make sure you put in a stop loss. Maybe you make 100%. I don't know. I'm not going there. I do not understand the companies, including AIG being the most difficult. If I had to invest in any of them, I would invest in Citigroup. I think there's value there. Also, you know, the government, they're not going to allow you to short, you know, not going to allow Citibank to go out of business. They're not going to allow you to short the stock. If, you know, financials come down, they're definitely going to not let Citigroup fail, along with Bank of America and the rest of the industry. So at least you know you have a backstop there, and it does have some value. But as far as Fannie Mae, Freddie, AIG, guys, you know, people have been telling you to avoid them, and you could have made 200-300% on them. So,
yeah, but they're not really stock. That's not really – I don't think that's stock investing. I don't mean to poo-poo anybody making a lot of money on any particular investing, but you know what? That's a gamble. You know, we don't know if Fannie and Freddie are going to be taken back by the government at any second.
Any second. But, you know what, you have to understand something. From, you know, doing Stocks in 10 newsletter for years now, looking at low-price stocks, people love these stocks no matter what. And if you put out a report, seriously, if I wrote a report about Fannie and Freddie tomorrow, I'd get 100,000 hits. Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, you can get 200,000.
People want to know what's going on. Should I invest them? It's what they're excited about. So, of course, from a professional standpoint, you look at it and say, okay, I don't understand these companies. They have negative book value. They're worthless. The government has an enormous stake in them. Nobody knows what the hell's going on. But, you know, as you know, we can't advise thousands, you know, tens of thousands of people, you know, what to do. You know, we can't really advise them something that we can't see, we don't understand. But, however, there's a lot of individual investors that just want to buy these stocks. And I'm not recommending they do. I'm just saying that if they do, be very, very careful because you could result in a complete wipeout of all your money.
Mm-hmm. All right. I don't disagree with you because those two in particular, Citigroup has been very volatile, as we know, up 70% over the last, I don't know, month and a half or so. Mm-hmm. Bank of America is moving all over the place. I mean, we had a couple of bad days in the banks. A lot of concern right now about possibly a bank. We heard some rumors this week about banks that are being problematic. As a matter of fact, we saw the Fed statement that said that or minutes that said that. You know, they are still buried in the minutes, by the way, still concerned that there are some very large banks that will have some major credit problems moving forward. I mean, that's no surprise to anybody. I think the biggest surprise to everybody is where are the toxic assets? They're hiding somewhere.
I know, and it's amazing how everyone quickly forgot about them.
Yeah, did they go anywhere?
Well, I think they might have gone somewhere because they changed mark to market, right? So
right, so they're no longer toxic.
That's another thing, too. Right. I mean, well, are they going to change back mark to market? I mean, you know, when you're changing the rules, and I use this example, you know, like the Dallas Cowboys have fourth and goal from the 1 yard line in the Super Bowl, and, you know, Troy Aikman hands the ball off to Emmitt Smith, and he gets tackled, you know, game over, and all of a sudden the referee comes out and says, whoa, you're getting an extra down.
Right.
You know, when you change the rules, it changes the landscape of everything.
Right.
It changes, you know, how the bookies are going to do. What, you know, the reflections on the other team, if Dallas would have lost. I mean, the reflections aren't going to be seen, or the implications aren't going to be seen for years and years out. And we haven't seen that yet, which is frustrating, because right now it looks like, hey, okay, every time the government, you know as well as I do, when they announce some kind of stimulus plan, it's great. It's the best news. Everybody loves it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay that money back. And when we do, it could be in a lot of trouble. And I think the big question, which everybody's trying to answer on every single TV show, is when? When is it going to happen? When are we going to see inflation? I'm pretty much in the camp that we're going to see it a lot later. Although, you know, and actually, real quick, for gold right now, I'd probably be taking profits in gold. It seems like the whole entire world is on the gold bandwagon right now. I've been on it for a very long time. I think I would lighten up my load a little bit. I like gold longer term. I think it's going to pull back because everybody I know is on that trade right now.
Yep. Well, you know what I like better, right? Tuna fish.
There you go.
Listen, so about gold, and let's talk about some of the foreign markets. I mean, the Shanghai Index came down, what, 25% recently?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
They care for a couple of days.
And nobody blinked an eye. This is an index. This isn't a stock. 25% it came down, and nobody even cares. I cannot believe that. That is, I know it's up 80%. I just cannot believe that. No, there was hardly any mention. People were like, China pulled back. 25% that index pulled back. That's an enormous, enormous amount.
I don't know if it's done yet either. There's some talk about another 25%. You know, we have stayed away from that index. We've stayed away from that particular area. We like Hong Kong better, a little bit more stable, a little bit more, it still has a lot of the same similarities, of course, and a lot of the same trading issues and all. But, you know, we've been liking Singapore. We've been liking Korea, South Korea, of course. Mm-hmm. that region is very volatile. I mean, India also has been kind of moving around. We got out of all of those about a month and a half ago before they all kind of came down, and we kind of entered those about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, back into those, as I call it, the BICs, Brazil, India, and China/Hong Kong. But I don't know. China's kind of interesting. It's like they pulled the punch bowl away, and they freaked out. They totally freaked out over there.
Did you see how it bounced back, though, really quick? Like, it seemed like the buyers tried to jump in on that, and then, boom, they got killed pretty much.
They got killed. It went up 1.5% or 2% one day, then it went down 6.5% 2 days ago, 3 days ago, whatever it was. And then it kind of moved back up. But, you know, the question is, you know, what is really triggering this? Because if you watch the nightly action of that market, it is all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be up 1.5%, 2%, and then 5 minutes later, it could be flat.
Yeah.
So, I'll tell you what's happening there. What's happening is that a lot of the money that was given to the people from the government was used for speculation. They took the loans from the houses, they took a piece of it, and they put it in the markets because why not? And maybe they borrowed more on that and more on margin, sound familiar. And then what happened from there is that when the government said, and a few banks in particular, I think it was a commercial bank, a construction bank, said that they weren't going to offer as much. And I think loans were down 70% as compared to the month before in July. And people said, wait a minute, we're not going to get these loans anymore. And then the government said, we're going to start tracking where the money's going to make sure that it's not getting into too much speculation. I think they said, you know, wait a second, I better get my money and my profits out now before this whole thing goes down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, how much do you trust the statistics in China? Because now I'm seeing estimates as high as 12% GDP growth by 2011. And, you know, in all fairness, 4 months ago, I was not a fan of China, and China went up a lot since then. So I've been dead wrong, and I always point out when I'm wrong. And that was one of the things I was wrong on. But it's amazing to see that, you know, are these statistics believable? Because is there any proof behind them? And how do you invest in something that you don't believe in? If you don't, I mean, do you go to individual stocks, which there's a lot of stocks you can invest in now that trade on New York Stock Exchange and our exchanges. But, you know, what do you do with the statistics? Do you actually believe them?
I mean, the problem is that what I find interesting is that they almost change their GDP numbers on a weekly basis. I mean, it's constantly updating the GDP. And am I right?
No, I just think it's funny when you change like a macro number.
It's
like,
ridiculous.
You know, on a daily basis.
I know. The problem is that I trust it? I don't know. I mean, you know, do I trust the numbers? They're hard to, everybody says don't trust the numbers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the problem is that I guess that we have to take with a grain of salt. The government and the investors and everything they're doing is all about, you know, China And I don't know how we can't, you know, I don't know. It's a difficult question, Frank. I'd love to trust them. Do we trust our own government?
Yeah, no, right? That's a good question. But our government isn't pumping out, like, these crazy statistics, though. I mean, 12% GDP growth.
Well, like, that, not only that, 12% GDP growth without any kind of exports, to speak
yeah.
of. And so there's no, so in other words, there's no foreign or external stimulus or anything going on there. It's all internal. So I guess they can regulate it. My understanding is they do a couple of funny things. There's actually, we're having a guest on not too long from now who's going to discuss a lot of the details here, and particularly on this issue of whether or not we can trust the data. He says no. One of the things he says is the things, for example, is when you do bookings and things like that, they advance book it, and they and when there's like almost to the degree of if our like pending home sales actually counted as home sales.
Yes, and pending home sales, especially with credit problems. Now, I've heard from so many people who are trying to get houses that they almost pretty much, you know, about 20 different credit checks. They go back and check everything. The
right.
difficulty, it's over 3 to 4 month process. Even people who are buying houses now might not be able to get tax credit because you get it after you close. So if you're buying now, what is it, in November, they're probably not going to get it.
Yeah.
But the credit checks are unbelievable right now. Unbelievable. Yeah, you're right.
So in China, the question is, you know, do we trust it? I don't know. Let me ask you about the home area, the home builders and all that. I mean, these high-end home builders, Toll Brothers, and in particular, you know, look at the higher-end ones. Was it Horton? I guess they do a little bit lower. But Toll being, I guess, the highest-priced home builders. Are they justifying the price and where these stocks are right now with the fact that, you know, maybe they'll start building in California after the wildfires? I don't know. But it seems to me that you know, where are they building the, you know, where are they getting these revenues from? Or is it just a sheer cut down of expenses and something else going on?
Well, you look at the earnings estimates, and you would, some people fail to realize or which forgot, is the home builders, their earnings and their stock prices got hit a lot before everyone else. So a lot of people seeing this, hey, the rebound, okay, housing's coming back, that's great for the home builders, and, you know, I guess that means that the economy is going to come back afterwards, because they were first to the party to really see all these mm-hmm. Terrible problems.
Mm-hmm.
But going forward, there's a lot of home builders, I think, that are in trouble. So, you know, with debt covenants, restructuring, and, you know, a lot of we're able to raise money, but it's going to be interesting going forward. It's Toll Brothers. It's so difficult to get a read on, especially the CEO, who I'm not a fan of. I mean, he's, you know, selling shares, you know, tell everybody things are great, and he's selling his shares, and then he's also going and saying, we have to extend the tax credit and make it even more. So, yeah, you can't really get a read from Toll Brothers. I love when people say, well, you know, Toll said this, and he said that, and he tried to, you know, buy the stock or sell the stock. Whatever he says, I really don't trust. But I do know that Toll Brothers is probably the best in terms of fundamentals. Mm-hmm. out there, which is good, which will limit your downside risk. Now, if home builders take off from here, that's probably going to go up the least amount. But right now, where the market is, if you're going to buy a home builder, I'd probably buy Tolls, but don't buy it because the CEO said something. Because really, I can't gauge that guy, and I've been following him for 5 years. I have no idea. So.
And finally, how about the casino stocks? Wynn, Las Vegas Sands, they did something very interesting where they are going to do an IPO of the Macau divisions. So now, of course, everybody hears something about China, and everybody gets all excited, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think about them?
I like companies like IGT, which makes the slot machines, and here's why. They, you know, people saying, well, casinos is discretionary money. We have to pay back this money somehow, and a lot of times what they do, even, you know, they open up more casinos, they take more of the pie, and they open up, they're changing actual racetracks to things called racinos, where they actually open up slot machines and they're passing laws little by little. Now every single state's going to allow it. It's just a matter of time because everybody's in an enormous amount of debt, and it's the quickest way to get revenues because people just love to gamble. So I think that's going to be good for the casino company. Plus, the casino companies are down so much. We're looking at who's the CEO for Las Vegas Sands. I think he saw his wealth go from $12 billion to $1 billion or something.
That was
unbelievable.
That was
but
rough.
It is coming back, and the Macau statistics have been I think I want to say they're at record highs last time I looked, so they really rebounded sharply. And there's three companies that have exposure to that, and that is was it Las Vegas Sands, MGM, and Wynn all have agreements where mm-hmm. they open up casinos in mm-hmm. In Macau. So those three companies that benefit. But yeah, you know, they've been beat up pretty bad. Now they show that they don't have liquidity problems, at least right now. You've seen those stock prices really move higher. I like IGT. It's a more safer stock, and I think that's a good play in the U.S.
For the for the slot machines.
Yes, for the slot machines.
But one of the things that's interesting, because we had way back when we liked a stock called Shuffle Master. Remember they had the shuffle machines, and they had a couple of games and royalties on the games. It was IGT and a couple other slot machine companies. But I'm hard pressed to really understand Macau being one thing. But if in fact Macau they're cutting back on the money that the government's lending, just like their stock market, do you think we could see a pullback in the casino gambling?
In Macau, right now China's booming. I mean, yeah, the market pulled back, but China's in much better shape than everybody else right now. So I guess, you know, it's attracting gamblers. Plus, you have to understand there's, you know, more, what is it, 1.3 billion people, and Macau is one of the places they can go and gamble. So, you know, if the economy's doing better, at least temporarily, you're going to see it. Going forward, I don't know how much it's going to have an impact on it. I mean, Macau is very early. It's hard to gauge statistics to see, but right now they're at record highs. That's all I know. It's being reflected in the stock price.
Well, they have to be because the other stocks in the Las Vegas and all that are not doing well. I know people in Las Vegas, you look at the stats in Las Vegas, I mean, one of the worst housing markets, one of the worst employment markets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though people like to gamble, a lot of companies are one of the biggest places they get their money from is from the corporate environment where they have their various, you know, year-end or, you know, annual meetings and all that. Now, a lot of those have been booked in advance, so they hold to them. But the question is, you know, how long can that really last in terms of, you know, long-term benefit for the Las Vegas area?
And they've cut back, and plus a lot of those companies were ones that did receive government money, and, you know, we see it come out all the time about, you know, well, they're having their company meeting, their annual meeting, or whatever it is in Vegas, why they have to go to Vegas for, maybe they could, you know, save costs.
Yeah, do it in Jersey or something.
Not a good idea.
Well, maybe even in, like, Baltimore. Who knows, right?
In Baltimore. I didn't even tell everybody that. I actually moved to Baltimore. So, you know, they said, okay, move to Baltimore and, you know, get to know everybody. If you like it, you could stay or, you know, you might be able to work from anywhere. But, yeah, I'm in Baltimore. I moved within, like, a 2.5-week period. I just took my family, came down here. That's how excited I was. And, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And it's one other thing, and it's a little bit of a plug, which is something I never do. I always try to provide information for free for everybody, and I think you do the same, where we go to Seeking Alpha for you know, transcripts. I had a gentleman called Phil Flynn on where he has, like, a free newsletter for oil. And there's a site called Daily Wealth that, you know, is a free site, and it's pretty much written by a guy called Steve Sugarrood. Pretty cool. Go it. You'll learn something every single time you read on that site. It's amazing. But I will tell you that he's one of the smartest guys I know. Otherwise, I would not promote it. And it's pretty cool, and it's for free. So there was one plug I did want to give because I'm not really like a plug guy, but I really think it's a good site.
Yeah. Well, Frank Curzio, again, always great to have you here. And I want to thank you and wish you luck. We're going to have you on again soon. And we'll put all the information about where we can find you over in the show notes of thedisciplinedinvestor.com.
Thank you very much for having me, and I appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk soon, buddy.
Thanks, bud. Bye.
And, you know, we talked about bringing on somebody who has a special news service, and Ranveer Singh is the founder and CEO of RanSquawk. You may not have heard of this before. It's kind of, I think, for a while, it was only for professionals, or at least geared for professionals, but I believe they have some new products out right now, which are much more geared toward individuals. So, Ranveer, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Andrew.
So tell me a little bit about RanSquawk, because I think it's kind of an interesting platform to talk about. I think that would you agree that most individuals don't really know about this kind of platform?
Sure, I can imagine that a majority of people in the retail space, as we like to call it, don't know about the service. So definitely not as many people as we would like. I mean, the concept of having an analyst team look at the financial markets is probably something that started up in futures houses in Chicago and in London, probably about 5-6 years ago. And it's sort of a concept that we've taken on. That's where I started back at Refco a few years back. And we've taken that concept and tried to bring it to the individual listener through a web-based platform where we have where you can receive a market commentary from our analysts, a team of them, who watch all the financial markets in the UK, Europe, and in the US every day and let people know about the big market moving activity that's going on.
So how is this different from, let's say, I don't know, just looking at a CNBC or listening to maybe some Bloomberg radio or something like that?
Sure, I get that question a lot, Andrew, and I think there's two things that I think differentiate Rand Squawk from, say, your regular news channels or services that are out there for the layman at home, which is the first of all, which is speed. I mean, CNBC, Bloomberg Radio, I mean, they give you the news, but they also give it to you on a kind of a delayed basis. I mean, even breaking news, as is covered on CNBC, will be at least 2 to 5 minutes behind when the actual news broke. So you'll get your professional guys who had access to that news when it happened, as we say, and then you'll get CNBC reporting on it a few minutes later. I mean, we like to bring that professional standard to the home user or the guy who sits at home trading on an FX platform or a spread betting platform here in the UK. And I think the second main difference between, say, Rand Squawk and, say, Bloomberg Radio is the fact that there's no filler, if you like. Mm-hmm. It's we're not a radio station, so we don't interview people. We don't ask them what I think are pretty mindless questions on how they feel about the economy. We don't have CEOs of multinationals coming in and talking their own book. We talk purely on what's happening in the markets. And if there's nothing happening, then a lot of the time, you know, what you hear is absolutely nothing, which is silence. But if there are things happening, we let people know what's going on.
Right.
And I think the third thing which I would point out is kind of we're akin to an information exchange service like a broking desk would be, but obviously we're not affiliated to any sort of broking organization. We're purely independent. But because of that, we get access to any rumors that are going around the market. So they're not news events, as you might say, but if there are any rumors going around the trading floors, going around the NYSE or anything like that, we have people, contacts there who'll tell us about that. I mean, just today, the day that we're speaking, we got a rumor on the ISM number, which came through a few minutes before the number. It came through from a trading desk in New York, and it turned out to be pretty close to what the number was. And we report on rumors because other people in the market know about these rumors as well. So it's what the professional user would be used to, but it's bringing a professional standard to the guy to the guy at home for a reasonable price.
So, I guess that the other thing is that you're from what you just said, it's not just a news source. You know, you're getting information from a variety of different places. Now, that information could be good, it could be bad. I'm assuming what happens is that, you know, over time you hear information and you know, you hear maybe a rumor, or you hear a we'll call it a tip. I don't know what it's called exactly, but what happens over time is that, you know, you'll filter out the good ones from the bad ones, I assume.
Sure. I mean, we've been Rand Squawk's been in operation for over 3 years now. And before that, as I said previously, I mean, I ran the analyst desk at Refco Trading Services for 3 years before that. So our contact base, if you like, of trusted market sources has been built over that 6 year period. And so we're not sort of sitting there waiting for anyone willy-nilly to phone us up and say, oh, I'm hearing a number which is, it might be a bit lower or higher for non-farm payrolls. By the way, we've never got a rumor on non-farm payrolls, so don't expect that. But you know, I mean, we have quite a trusted contact base, and if we are hearing rumors from sources that we're not accustomed to, then we do everything that we can to try and check those rumors out before we put those out onto the air. Because I mean, with a substantial amount of professional and retail listeners, you know, we have a responsibility to report, yes, the news and rumors, but we don't want to be putting out things that can be sort of made out to be irresponsible reporting. So, right. You know, if we have someone coming, phoning up and say, oh, I've heard a rumor that Goldman Sachs is going to go bust today, you know, we're not just going to get onto the mic and say, you know, so Goldman Sachs is in real trouble because some guy phoned us up. I mean, it'll be a process of checking, and, you know, we might even, you know, phone Goldman Sachs themselves, although that's not always the best way to solve the problem.
Right, exactly.
but I mean, more with geopolitical issues. I mean, back at the time when, you know, there were heightened tensions both in London and in New York after 9/11, after 7/7, you know, there was a lot of times where you'd get people saying, you know, bank subway station in the city of London has been closed down because, you know, there might be a suspect package there, you know, and we would go through the regular course of checking with the authorities, et cetera, before letting people know. And most of the time, in fact, 100% of the time, apart from 7/7, turned out to be a false alarm. And in that case, we would also let people know if the rumor had gone around the market that there was a suspect package and something's going wrong, that something that people are a little bit afraid of, we would then let people know that this is nothing to be worried about, and the bond market would then come off, stocks would then recover, and so we give people a bit of a heads up in that direction as well. So it's responsible reporting.
Right.
It's responsible. It's not rumor mongering for the sake of rumor mongering, because if you start giving out rumors X, Y, and Z, I mean, we hear maybe about 5 to 10 different rumors every couple of days, and if you start putting everything out, then, you know, 90% of them are false, and you will just lose market integrity and in the end lose a client base.
Let me ask you something. Let's take this full circle now and talk about the, well, rumors or information. I'm assuming that if information and rumors are correct, let's assume they're not just guesses here, and let's talk more of a general, not directly at you, just generally, okay? That means that, you know, if we take this to the furthest extent, the realization is that information is out there that people have use of prior to other people having use of.
I think that it's undeniable that there's always going to be information out there that some people have before other people have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, when you get to the case, I mean, there are obviously authorized releases of economic data that come straight out of the lockup, which are all heavily controlled by, you know, government institutions like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Fed as well. You know, I'm not saying for one minute that those institutions are leaking their decisions or data to anyone before anyone else. I mean, I think the market gets that data at the same time. But there are, especially when it comes to stocks, I think that it would be unreasonable to assume that the whole market knows about information to do with stocks at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the stock market has thrived on rumors since its inception. Rumors of good rumors and bad rumors to do with companies. And that makes part of the market information that we like to deliver to our clients. I think the whole stocks arena is probably the one where rumors are the most prevalent, where they're company specific and something's come out. Then even if we're not talking about rumors, even if we're just talking about just the news as it's reported, the thing that Rand Squawk does is to filter that news out to the listener. Apart from all the other noise coming out, I mean, we look at about 30 to 40 different sources of news on our analyst desk. We have 3 analysts there every day who are at any one time scouring these different news wires. And there is just so much news out there that sometimes important news can get missed or not seen for anything up to 5 minutes after its release. And that's another great benefit that Rand Squawk offers the trader at home, which is that our analysts will see that information and they'll put it out to you as close to as soon as it gets released,
as possible, sure.
So that you'll be able to benefit mm-hmm. from the market move, because there is always a gap. I mean, I take, for example, yesterday BP made a giant oil discovery in the Gulf of Mexico, and they released that as a press release at, it was 10 a.m. London time. And, you know, we put that out to our listeners, And it was at least 3 minutes before the market moved, both BP shares rallying and the price of oil coming off slightly. So that was just an example of a non-rumor-based situation where Ransford proved a benefit.
Yeah, you're ahead of it. So, all right, in closing, I guess the interesting issue is that obviously that, you know, being ahead of the game as much as possible is always a good thing, of course, for traders. I mean, we're not talking about this as, you know, kind of obviously somebody that needs the information quickly. That's important. And I think that, so I just want to kind of like get a picture of how this works, because you mentioned, it's through the computer, through the internet, it just comes right through your speakers, I guess, right?
Sure. It's a voiceover applet, so a voiceover IP application. I mean, we have two methods of delivery. I mean, one is a voiceover IP application, and one is via our website, where we have an embedded sort of media player, which is linked up to a microphone, which our analysts broadcast through. So it's as simple as getting in touch with us. We have a number of channels dedicated for fixed income, for equities, for FX, for energy, and we have a combination service of everything. And if you're interested in the service, you get in touch with us, and we either set you up with an applet, which you download onto your desktop, and you're away and listening for a week's free trial, or you go through the web and listen through that medium. We also publish written research that you can rely on throughout the day, and everything that we squawk, which is the terminology that we give it, everything that we broadcast also goes on a scrolling headline page. So if you do, say, go to the toilet or something, miss something important, or miss
God
the
forbid.
World coming to an end, you know, you'll at least be able to see it on the RandScore headlines.
Right, I hear you. All right, Ranveer Singh, thank you so much for joining us. We'll put the links and the information on the Disciplined Investor page. I think it's a really cool thing that a lot of people don't have a taste of, so I thought it would be really interesting to bring you on to share that with us. I appreciate you coming in from the UK, talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Andrew. You have a nice day.
All right, be well, buddy. Bye-bye. Okay. That's going to wrap it up today for the Disciplined Investor Podcast, the Labor Day edition. A couple of guests there that brought you some good information on not only the economy and stocks and everything in between. And, of course, you've asked me to speak to Frank Curzio again. And, of course, he was here. And we'll have him on again very soon and introducing some of his products that he's going to have. A lot of people have emailed us over the last number of months and have asked, where is Frank? Well, there you have it. He's there. In the meantime, if you have any questions, you know where to find me. If you want to pick up a quick read over the weekend, go over to audible.com or iTunes. Pick up my book, The Disciplined Investor. It's available with a downloadable kind of guide, so you can kind of look at the charts and the graphs as you're listening. It's pretty cheap, I think in the $7 or $8 range these days, over at iTunes and audible.com. And then, of course, if you are those that like to read, pick up the book over at Amazon, a mere $13 or so, to learn how to become a disciplined investor, the ins and the outs of this, various markets and how to pick stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, things of that nature that you need to really understand. In the meantime, have a great Labor Day. We'll see you again next week, where we have some great guests lined up. And from there, we'll just kind of make it into the new year, where I believe trading is going to pick up and we'll see some additional volatility as well. So with that, I say goodbye. Disciplined Investor Podcast number 125, signing off. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.